Good morning, everyone. Thank you for joining us. I know there are a few people still coming in the door. That's fine. I'm going to go ahead and start. I think I can talk over just about anything. I'd like to welcome you here today on behalf of the Brookings Institutions and our co-sponsors to today's conference on using comparative effectiveness research to improve the health of priority populations. And I can't think of a more important or timely topic to work on. I'm Mark McClellan. I'm the director of the Engelberg Center for Healthcare Reform at the Brookings Institution, and we are grateful to be hosting this event with a number of co-sponsors who really know this topic. That includes the Office of Minority Health at the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, the Veterans Health Administration, the National Institute of Mental Health, the National Institute for Disability and Rehabilitation Research at the U.S. Department of Education, the National Minority Equality Forum, and the American Academy of Pediatrics. They've all made very important contributions in kind, substantively, in all ways as we put together this event, and we look forward to continuing to work with them as we move forward on addressing this very critical health policy challenge. We've got a lot of ground to cover today and only a limited amount of time, so I want to keep things moving. We don't have any scheduled breaks during this meeting between 9 and noon. I know that might seem like a little bit intense, but you should feel free to take advantage of either the transitions between the panels or if you need to step up and walk out for a few minutes. That's completely understandable. We do have a lot of ground that we want to cover, though. We also want to make sure that despite the significant territory to cover and the very diverse and informed speakers, we want to encourage an open discussion and interaction with all of you, and we've set aside time in our panels to do that. We're going to have roving microphones around the audience, so at that point in the sessions, when there's opportunity for comments and questions, just raise your hand and be sure to identify who you are when you ask the question. Again, given the pace that we expect to need to keep this morning, we'd ask you to keep your questions brief to the point as well. There are some press in the room, and everything that we're doing today, including your comments, want you to consider to be on the record. And then finally, for those of you who are up here in the front who will be doing some speaking, just a reminder that we have Sean, who's right there, will be helping keep us on time. And I know all of you are very concise and efficient in your remarks, so that won't be an issue. But we do have a lot of ground to cover, so I'm going to get right to it. Addressing these comparative effectiveness questions is very important but also very challenging, has been a somewhat controversial healthcare policy issue. And this is coming from two facts. I know that where a lot of the attention in healthcare reform has been focused has been on rising costs and the evidence that there are lots of ways in which Americans are not getting the best possible care at the lowest possible cost. Gaps in overuse of care, where many services, particularly those where the evidence base is weak, are used at highly variable rates around the country. Gaps in underuse of care, where treatments that have been proven effective are not used nearly as frequently as they should be for people with chronic diseases. Gaps in misuse of care, where medication interactions and other preventable adverse events and treatment errors could lead to better outcomes and lower costs as well. Unfortunately, the evidence on all of these issues for priority populations is more limited, but to the extent that we have evidence, a lot of it is worrisome, that the gaps in quality in all ways seem to be larger in many cases for the priority populations that we're focusing on today. And one of the hopes of comparative effectiveness research is to get at that problem. If there are real opportunities and real needs for improving quality and improving the cost of care at the same time, there probably aren't greater opportunities for addressing those needs than in special populations, in these priority populations. The problem is that because evidence is limited and because it is certainly possible that effects in these groups of patients may differ from effects in other groups of patients, we need to be very careful. I mean, these are populations that are already facing higher rates of adverse events, worse health problems, lower quality of life in many cases already. We need to be very careful about policy reforms in these groups. And that means comparative effectiveness research takes on some special opportunities and special challenges. The challenges in terms of addressing all of these potential limitations and problems for applying it to priority populations. But the opportunity this is where, with better evidence, we have the greatest potential for improving the health of Americans. And these are the Americans who have the most to gain from understanding gaps in quality and opportunities to improve it. And when I'm talking about gaps in quality, I'm taking the broad definition of comparative effectiveness research that the Institute of Medicine has considered, that HHS is using, which means not just looking at one drug or one treatment versus another for a particular population of patients, but looking at different approaches to medical practice, looking at different healthcare policies that influence medical practice, formularies, benefit designs, payment systems, things like that. All of those can have a significant impact on the quality and cost of care for Americans, but particularly may have different or distinct or special effects for priority populations. So that's what we're focusing on today. How do we move forward in addressing this opportunity and doing it in a way that helps, not hurts, with those big gaps in quality and cost or efficiency of care that particularly affect priority populations? You all may remember that about a year ago we had a comparative effectiveness research event at the Brookings Institution, and I closed my opening comments at that conference with this slide. Our center, along with the Hamilton Project, had published a series of commission papers on implementing comparative effectiveness research priorities, methods, and impact. And in case you missed it, we still have those papers available on our website. The authors included a range of experts in the field, people like Alan Garber, David Meltzer, Sean Tunis, Steve Pearson, many others. Some of you who are participating today participated in that event. Collectively, these papers were intended to establish a framework and consolidate some of the previous work on how comparative effectiveness research could be done right, at least in three major areas: priority setting, improving methods and data infrastructure, and using comparative effectiveness research to guide practice and policy. These certainly weren't the last word, but these have been part of our ongoing efforts in this area to try to make sure that we're getting the most out of the comparative effectiveness research efforts that are now underway at a rapid pace in the federal government. Many of the recommendations from these papers were incorporated in the Patient Protection and Affordable Care Act, which, as you know, had some major provisions related to establishing a comparative effectiveness research institute, the Patient-Centered Outcomes Research Institute, earlier this year. Now, today, 1 year later, implementation of comparative effectiveness research is in full swing. The stimulus legislation, the American Reinvestment and Recovery Act from a year before, allocated $1.1 billion to comparative effectiveness research, which had to be committed to specific projects by the end of September 2010. Now, the figures that we show here are based on a review by our center of the first $760 million in economic stimulus comparative effectiveness research funding that has been publicly reported. So this is all that has been publicly reported up till now. There's still some of that additional funding in process. About half of the funding has been allocated to projects for evidence development, that is, specific studies of health interventions, and about 40% has been in the area of infrastructure and methods development, creating a better foundation, building kind of the concrete and steel basis, the networks, the infrastructure for comparative effectiveness research. And a lot of that funding has gone to improving capacity to conduct observational comparative effectiveness research in healthcare, in data from healthcare systems and actual practices. From the very beginning, a key goal of comparative effectiveness research has been to study the impact of interventions on subgroups of patients, not just broad population-level effects, but subgroups that are actually relevant, most relevant to clinical decision-making, the particular types of patients, the combination of factors at a patient level that really influence and should influence medical treatment decisions. And this enables the targeting of or the personalization of interventions appropriately to the patients who truly benefit. And of particular interest in this effort is the so-called priority populations. These are subgroups of the of our overall population who are particularly vulnerable to issues related to healthcare disparities. And as we show here in some of these quotes, the need for studying the effects of interventions within the priority populations was called out for by the Federal Coordinating Council for Comparative Effectiveness Research, by the IOM Committee on Comparative Effectiveness Research Prioritization, and most recently by the healthcare reform legislation that replaced the Federal Coordinating Committee with the Patient-Centered Outcomes Research Institute. Now, priority populations, for those of you who haven't been following this real closely, are defined as children and adults with special characteristics who place them at higher risk for poor health. These include people with low incomes, low socioeconomic status, racial and ethnic minorities, children and the elderly, individuals with disabilities, and people with multiple chronic conditions. These populations may benefit substantially from comparative effectiveness research. Again, the opportunities there for improving care are the greatest, but the challenges are too. It will only work if research priorities reflect the special needs of these populations and if the barriers to conducting comparative effectiveness research that provides answers that are truly relevant and accurate for these groups can be overcome, and if the results can be translated and communicated effectively to these patients and their providers. And so that brings us to our panels today. We've got several objectives for our meeting today, and the prior work that went into this and the subsequent work that we're doing collaboratively to follow on it. We have convened this project to identify challenges and opportunities for using comparative effectiveness research to improve the health of priority populations, including to identify methods for setting research priorities that will inform the care of priority populations. That's a specific emphasis within the overall need to take steps to set priorities effectively for comparative effectiveness research, to discuss the existing and needed infrastructure for conducting comparative effectiveness research in priority populations, and to address specific barriers in the translation and dissemination of evidence to providers and patients involved in priority populations. To achieve these objectives, we've convened a panel of national experts and stakeholders on each of these three major topics. The panels have met by teleconference over the past several months with the mission of developing some practical recommendations for discussion on each of these topics. And available today, which hopefully you all have, is a preliminary discussion draft or some of the initial ideas for specific ways to use comparative effectiveness research opportunities to improve the health of priority populations. And I want to be clear that this is a discussion draft. These ideas reflect some of the perspectives, some of the issues that the panelists have brought up. It doesn't reflect their employers' or organizations' views necessarily, and as you'll hear from the discussion, not everybody agrees or at least puts the same emphasis on all the recommendations or might take them in some different directions. That's good. That's the reason for having this discussion today with all of you. Over the course of today's events, we want to continue the process of developing these recommendations with the involvement of all of you, experts, stakeholders, other people who know and care about these critical public health issues. And following today's events, our panels are going to reconvene and we'll revisit the paper and refine it for publication, dissemination, and for further steps on helping to support the very important implementation of comparative effectiveness research that is imminently coming up. Now, to kick off this discussion, I can't think of anyone better than Carolyn Clancy, my friend and the director of the Agency for Healthcare Research and Quality. Carolyn is a physician, a researcher, who has both a passion and a career commitment to using research to address the needs of vulnerable groups and, in particular, to making sure comparative effectiveness research is done right. She was a leader of the Federal Coordinating Council for Comparative Effectiveness Research. She's going to be a member of the Board of Governors of the soon-to-be-formed Patient-Centered Outcomes Research Institute. And this morning, we're going to hear from Carolyn about her perspective on using comparative effectiveness research to improve the needs of the health of priority populations. Carolyn, please.
Here, from the famous pathologist Rudolf Virchow, who once said that all diseases have two causes, one pathological and the other political. And since we are now into social networking and all this kind of stuff, my tweet for my comments would be, healthcare reform, game change, chronic illness, disparities now. And that's where I think CER can make a huge difference. As Mark indicated, this is something that's very, very important to ARC, improving quality and reducing disparities. So it has been something that we've taken very seriously in our opportunities to invest in comparative effectiveness research, and also, frankly, as a way to think about our investments in the use of health IT to improve quality and reduce disparities. Now, every year we get to report to the Congress on how we're doing in terms of disparities in healthcare. Let me just say there's no shortage of opportunities for improvement. That would be the most positive things I could say. We report on both quality and access. So for blacks, Asians, and Hispanics, at least two-thirds of measures of quality are not improving. That is to say the gap stayed the same or actually got larger. For blacks, only about 20% of measures of disparities in quality of care improved. Not eliminated, but improved. That is to say the gap decreased. For poor people, disparities are improving for almost half of the quality measures, which is good news. This is the first year we've seen this. We started reporting in 2003. And for Asians and American Indians and Alaskan Natives, approximately one-third of disparities in quality improved. I could go on and on. For those of you who love data, it's all on our website at arc.gov. And what we know from a recent study by the Kaiser Family Foundation that I thought was particularly breathtaking, focusing on women's health care, is that at the state level, quality and disparities are related but very distinct concepts. So I've been thinking about it in very much similar ways to the way that Mark framed it for us, two sides of the same coin. If you want to actually have a big impact on quality, you go where the opportunity is the largest and so forth. But it's very, very interesting because in the Kaiser report, high quality does not guarantee low disparities and vice versa. So, for example, Massachusetts was among the best states involving the share of women who did not get a mammogram, about 16%. But the percentage of women of color without a dental checkup was about 80% higher than that of white women. In Oklahoma and I think West Virginia, white women and women of color both experienced significant problems with access to care and in terms of quality of care, but the disparities were almost non-existent. This is not the Everest of our ambitions in terms of reducing and ultimately eliminating disparities. But the overall point is that disparities exist in every state on almost all measures. So all of you know this. I know many people in this room, and I'm thrilled to see you. How do we create a framework for comparative effectiveness research that captures, analyzes, and actually engages clinicians and their patients in these populations and the use of this research? Well, as Mark said, and I like those slides, by the way. I might be borrowing those. Ours are much more boring looking. The American Recovery and Reinvestment Act, or ARRA, allocated $1.1 billion for comparative effectiveness research. In fact, at the Brookings conference last year, I do recall, this was just when CER was starting to get a little bit sensitive, and I remember that Senator Baucus proposed maybe we should just call it FRED. He didn't care. He could see that the work was important, but anything we could do to kind of defuse some of the concerns. But the focus on priority populations across the $1.1 billion has been very strong and consistent, and as I'm sure my colleague Richard Hodes from NIH would agree. In fact, we estimate that about half of the $400 million allocated to the Office of the Secretary was invested in either specific research demonstrations or data infrastructure investments that specifically address the needs of priority populations. I know some of you are waiting to hear more about this. You'll be hearing lots and lots of announcements of initiatives funded over the summer because we worked very, very hard and long to make sure that the three pots of money were very tightly coordinated. Just to give you a flavor for what some of this looks like at ARC, we've invested in research on delivery systems, because one thing that emerged this past year was broad consensus and agreement that CER is not just about the clinical stuff, but it's also the care delivery interventions, which is a good thing. So we are investing in research on various aspects of delivery systems and evaluations, emphasizing care for priority populations, which includes people who are members of racial and ethnic minorities, but also people with multiple chronic conditions and so forth. We have a specific initiative that you'll hear about in the near future focused on improving care for people with multiple chronic illnesses. So it's a very broad focus on priority populations. Now, if you look at chronic illness care in particular, the question is, how do we fix this? Now, where we've tended to see more improvements in quality of care and even some very promising developments in terms of reducing disparities is in hospitals, right? Now, the good news about hospitals is, although they're chaotic, you've got a captive population. You can have campaigns and blast people by email, signs on the wall, and so forth. Once you get outside the hospital walls, it gets a lot more challenging in terms of keeping issues important, keeping it in front of people's face, and so forth. But the Internet and other types of information and communications technology can be very, very helpful in that regard. And yet we see something of a digital divide. Now, these days, the digital divide I think about most of the time is with between us, people my age, and the digital natives. But if you actually look at some recent results from Pew, only about a third of people over 65 have used the Internet. About 75% of whites have used it compared with 59% of blacks. There's also significant differences associated with those for those who live in rural areas, presumably some broadband issues, as well as annual income. So we've got specific initiatives that we're funding this year designed to at least address the consequences of this divide. One is called iAdapt for Innovative Adaptation and Dissemination of ARC Comparative Effectiveness Research Projects, and this will go out to about 25 research teams who are going to come up with and test new ways of presenting this research information. Because if there's one thing we know about CER, is the ultimate success of this enterprise will not be judged in terms of peer-reviewed publications. That's all important. More better research is really important. The clear guiding intent is that it has an impact on improving patient care. So I really want to salute the three panels that you've put together here today. Some of the specific actions I think we can take, and you'll hear about in more detail. One is including data sources for evidence-based studies in diverse populations. A second is following through on the Institute of Medicine recommendations about collecting data at a fairly detailed level on patients, which I think is terrific. And what's really great news, some communities are starting to do this, right? Cincinnati has got 65 hospital leaders and trainers that they're actually making this part of everyday practice in the hospitals, just as one example. So that's very, very exciting. CER has also, by ARA, by ARC, and by the intent of the legislation, as I would read it, is very participatory. And the intent is that there's broad input from multiple stakeholders. I can speak for ARC and say over the past 5 years, we have found that fantastically useful. Newell is here, and he's been one of the people who's helped us, but not because everyone's giving us point-to-point recommendations, but because they're having a dialogue with each other. So I'm very optimistic and hopeful about others who will be appointed to the new to the board of the new Patient-Centered Outcomes Research Institute. And one thing I'm incredibly excited about is at the National Institute, I love saying that, for Minority Health and Health Disparities, where they've made some long-standing investments in community-based participatory research. The Office of Minority Health, on behalf of the Secretary, will be making additional supplemental investments, and I'm told that they are just totally overloaded with fantastic applications. That's all I can say about it, or I'd have to shoot you all. So challenges moving ahead, I think, is not just to make this aspirational, but to actually create a framework and operational plan moving forward where we're making sure that we're getting input from and collaborating closely with those who live in the worlds where priority populations are served, that we've got that perspective as part of our daily work at all times. Clearly, the opportunities are going to be discussed here this morning in terms of expanding infrastructure and capacity. I'm thrilled that we're making some investments that way this year in community health centers. ARC will shortly announce prospective studies with a very strong focus on those populations traditionally underrepresented in research. We're going to continue to need innovative CER methods, and we got to get a lot smarter faster about how do we get this information to people in such a way that good information is impossible to avoid. So I know that these are all big passions of Mark and his colleagues at Brookings, as well as many of my colleagues who will be presenting in the panel. So with that, I want to thank you for organizing this today. And I know you've got a tight schedule, so everyone's got to go boom. This is Working with Mark. Thanks for your attention.
Carolyn, thank you very much for your remarks to help get us started. We deeply appreciate them, and you can bet that we'll be staying in touch with all of those efforts that are underway in terms of developing the framework and supporting prospective studies with underrepresented populations, overrepresented on improved methods, on effective communication. I know ARC is in the process of getting a citizens forum up and running, too, is yet another way to have effective input. This really is a major priority now for the agency. So thank you very much for your leadership and the opportunity to work with you on these efforts.